We're nearly three decades into the epidemic, and we have the depressing news that AIDS is now the leading cause of death of women of reproductive age across the globe. Three decades ago, very few women were infected with HIV. It was a minority issue. But sadly, as HIV has taken its increasing toll on women, the pace of research and the response really hasn't kept up. Sadly, what we have now is some excellent treatments which we know can prolong life, and we know that they reduce death from TB, reduce death in pregnancy and childbirth, and yet many of these treatments have not been properly researched on women's bodies, and so there are many unanswered questions about how the treatments really affect women. And secondly, now that more and more women are accessing treatment, what we still don't know is how we can best get women into care and how we can make sure that that care is integrated. So, for example, a pregnant woman can get the right care for herself and her pregnancy to be healthy and also make sure that she gets the drugs she needs to prevent transmission to her baby.
What happened during that time? Why did the strategy, in a sense, not include women?
There were very good reasons for not including women in early research. Doctors and pharmaceutical companies are always very worried about how drugs might affect the growing fetus. And of course, we've had the terrible history of thalidomide, where women unintentionally took drugs which led to side effects in their babies. Of course, no one ever wants that to happen again. What that means is there's an extreme caution that women of reproductive age are not included in clinical trials. And indeed, when women are included in clinical trials, if they fall pregnant, they are told to end the trial. What this means is we simply don't have enough information about how these drugs work in women, and particularly in pregnant women. So, for example, one of the drugs that is now used as first-line therapy throughout the world, one of the best drugs we have in combination to combat AIDS, is recommended not to be used in women of reproductive age. And yet they are, in many countries, the majority of people with HIV.
What are some of the other parts of the strategy that you're announcing today?
One of the other things we're looking at is the effect on children. Now, in the rich world, we're incredibly fortunate in that we've basically eradicated transmission of HIV from pregnant women to their babies, and that's brilliant news. Sadly, in many of the poorer countries of the world, the opposite is true, and hundreds of thousands of babies are born with HIV every year. Tragically, we just don't have drugs available in the correct formulation for those children. We have the drugs, but they need to be in mini pills or syrups, or a range of other innovative delivery mechanisms. And quite simply, there isn't an economic rationale for many companies to make those products in that style. So we're really calling on the pharmaceutical industry to upscale its research and development process to make sure that these children who are being born with HIV can stay alive. And secondly, we're working alongside UNICEF to really call on the world for urgent attention to make sure that no more children are born with HIV. It's possible for us to do that by 2015. We need to get the political will and the financing behind that.
Now, you're in London for a meeting tomorrow, I believe, on the issue of universal access.
In 2005, the UK led the charge for the G8 and then the whole world at the UN to commit to this ambitious goal of universal access by 2010. It's sad, but truly the fact that we're only about a third of their way there. We've made remarkable progress in the last 5 years. The meeting tomorrow in London is to try very hard to reignite the energy and the passion to achieve that goal of universal access to HIV treatment, prevention, and care. We estimate there are about 10 million people who need HIV treatment today and are simply not able to access it. Sadly, so far, Canada, which is host of both the G8 and the G20 summits this year in June, has said that they will not talk about AIDS at the G8 and G20 summit. So my understanding of the meeting tomorrow here in London is that we're going to be hearing from African leaders, both from government and African people living with HIV, about what they need in their most affected countries to deliver universal access. And my suspicion is what they're going to say is we need more money. We need to make sure that this remarkable momentum over the last 5 years does not slow down, that the funding is not flatlined, and that we don't get into an unhealthy competition with other diseases or with climate change. The people with HIV have as much human right to continue the progress to universal access now in 2010 as they did in 2005.